It's up, right?
Yeah. Are we ready?
We are.
Okay, so we are now recording. This is the Josephine County Board of County Commissioners Thursday meeting, July 22nd, 2021 at the hour of 9:01. So here we go. Item number one, Sportsman's Park Master Plan Amendment. Mr. Hicks.
Yes, morning. All right, got the, per the board's request, I've got the premises, what I'm calling a premises alteration agreement. And I invited Steve from Risk Management to come in and participate in the discussion. And it was such short notice, I don't think anyone else was probably able to peel away from their duties. Anyway, the heart of the agreement is in paragraph number one, modification. Okay. And this is the piece that I really need to consult those who are more in the know than myself.
Okay.
And so if we could just pause on that one and really take a close look at what it is we're allowing them to do and make sure it's accurate.
Right.
Okay, modification agrees association. Do we have that map?
That drawing?
The drawing?
I don't have it. I know it exists and...
Well, this will work.
Yeah, and I was kind of wondering if a member of the association would make it this morning and I didn't actually... Admittedly, you know, reach out and call them, so I don't blame them for not being here. But
yeah, this is pretty. This is good. Let's see, variants on her. I think that's good enough.
Okay.
And within 180 days, we talked about that.
Right.
Actually, probably guys are buying the remedies. Okay. Yeah, I.
It's a straightforward kind of about the agreement.
Essence. Yeah, it's pretty
right.
Pretty simple. Yeah.
Right. Fine. So this gets us through the moment, and then we talk about the transfer later if there's to be one.
Right.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. That sums it up.
I mean, let's not even talk about the transfer. I mean, we would probably do this anyways. I mean, their board has made that decision out there. It's just because of our agreement that's 50 years old,
right.
We get pulled into it because we have to approve any
right. We have
to a master plan. That's basically
yep. They're lessees still.
Yeah.
So
right.
Yep.
So gotcha. Whether the transfer, I don't think the transfer has anything
and
to
you
do
with this.
No,
but I was doing a process.
Okay.
In
so we can move this to Wednesday's business session.
Okay. Let's do that, and we'll just be open to the possibility that once the Sportsman Association has reviewed it, they may have some changes. We'll discuss that at the business session if that's the case.
Yeah, and that will notice it to the public a little better.
Yeah.
And have Dan here probably.
Yes. Right.
So we can, yeah, and have someone from the range.
To speak on it on Wednesday?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a good PR.
And I don't know if Steve has more.
Steve, you got anything to say about it?
No, I mean, it's
okay.
Clearly an enhancement to the existing safety and separation between functions, you know. It's always a good thing. Okay.
Yeah, I think modernizing is, you also have to remember is the new barriers that they're constructing were not available 50 years ago.
Yeah, sure.
Okay,
yep.
I mean, that's just...
The mobile
is,
and the...
Yeah, so...
The effectiveness, I'm sure, is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the military's using now, so...
Okay.
Yep.
So, anyways. Okay, anything else on item number one?
I'm good.
You're good? All right. We are good.
Should I stick around or depart the scene?
Well, it's probably going to be pretty short.
All right, I'll hang up.
Yep, unless you see something.
Mr. Weber is up next.
I'm here.
You're here. There you go. Well, if we keep having mornings like this, maybe we don't have to worry about the extreme heat response.
I got to be honest, I was not ready for you guys to move that quickly.
Wow. Got a different chair this morning.
I got a...
All right. There's room for a touche in there.
I'd like to respond on Dan's behalf, but I will let him do that when he returns.
Okay.
Nice get. You got it.
So I am just switching over here. Here. So I was just going to present real quick. I just have one brief slide. So a little bit of background. In the past, we have not had a consistent approach to handling extreme heat events. It's been problematic. We have a tendency to be reactionary to to these types of events, and we want to move towards something that's more consistent. One of the challenges we face is, you know, a bit of a philosophical question of what is the expectation of us as a county? How much activity are we expected to take to try and keep people safe when extreme heat events occur? In the past, we've relied heavily on community partners activating things like cooling centers. We haven't really been able to allocate community or county resources to doing that. So part of this is to kind of present a more consistent model for how to move forward. This is built around the National Weather Service heat alerts. There's three phases to it. There's the heat advisory, which is essentially a lower level. It's not as much of an extreme risk. We don't plan on taking much action other than giving people notice, putting out public messaging, some prescriptive notices. These are things that you'll probably see fairly regularly throughout summer. But when we get to events like a heat watch, an alert like a heat watch, that's anticipating extreme heat. And that's where we move into asking for or putting out extended messaging and requesting our community partners begin to stand up and prepare to activate cooling centers. Cooling centers are one of the most effective ways we have of combating the risk associated with extreme heat. The number of people that don't have access to things like air conditioning in this community is very high, as I'm sure you're aware. But we don't have a mechanism for it as the county to stand these things up. So we're dependent on partners to do that. That can be challenging at times. But at this phase, we're just asking them to get ready. And then when we move into the heat warning, that's when the extreme heat is actually present. We're going to continue to expand and push out further messaging. We'll actually activate cooling centers, assuming we find community partners willing to stand up and do that. And of course, we will contemplate recommending or even actively canceling events, depending on whether they're ours or others, depending on whether or not we actively do it or just recommend they do it. Those could be things like sporting events, outdoor concerts, things like that. So this is kind of the high level, just rough model, how we approach an extreme heat event. So the question really for the board is, where does our responsibility lie as a government organization? Should we be offering space, like the fairgrounds, if it's available, to organizations to run cooling centers? Admittedly, fairgrounds not an optimal location, but it's better than nothing. Should we actually be staffing cooling centers? And this really is kind of a philosophical conversation because there isn't necessarily consistency one community to the next. It really depends on everything from the weather of a region to resources available. So I can tell you at present, we do not have dedicated staff capable of running a cooling center. This is something that would require resources and would require us to put a bit of time towards training and, you know, actively creating the infrastructure to do it.
You know, Michael, we're pretty fortunate here in Josephine County because we have a cooling center. It starts at the Jackson County line. It runs contiguously all the way to the Curry County line. It's called the Rogue River. And if you go back and you look at photos, summertime photos at the Historical Society up until even the late 60s, you will see how many people are at Riverside Park because that was prior to air conditioning systems. And people really utilize that river to cool down in the heat of the day. And I mean, I'll just throw it out there, that's something that wouldn't take much staffing, if any. It's just, we could, you know, tell people that's a good place to cool down. Go ahead.
I was going to say that's something we will absolutely include in the public messaging piece.
Yeah.
So the ultimate question is this model adequate or should we be pushing to do more?
Well, in my opinion, we want to rely on the two cities to address this problem more than the county, because we don't have big buildings in the middle of nowhere like out in Williams to try and make a cooling center. And so I might be open to the discussion of us helping fund some of that from the county side, but I think the city should really take the lead. This also reminds me of the warming center conversation, and our warming centers turn into transient camps really fast. You really don't get a lot of little old ladies coming in to get warm because their house is not heated or something. What you get is a place for transients to congregate and take advantage of services and scare off the people that might really want some help. And so the fairgrounds is a tough option for me because I really think, I mean, Walmart's open, Home Depot's open. There's plenty of places that are well air conditioned. Some of them even have chairs, like Big Lots. And the libraries offer some of their space as well for people to cool down. And so as a county, I don't think I want to build up infrastructure to do warming or cooling centers, but I would be willing to help the cities if they think a solution is good for them.
You also have to remember that in our future is going to have some rolling blackouts. And if those happen, you can have all the cooling centers you want if you don't have some place to plug them in to.
Right.
So I think we ought to look at all options, Michael, and look to our past. You know, I mean, like I said, some of this modern day stuff we didn't have very. You know, I grew up in a desert. We never had air conditioning. Right. You know.
Yeah, a swamp cooler was as good as you got.
We didn't even have that, you know. And so our schools didn't have air conditioning in the desert. We just adjourned by June 1 to get out of there. So I think we ought to look at all the options out there that are available and make sure that they're known and convey that information to the public.
Yep, and if I could add the one sentence, potential cancellation of events, I'd like to make that an advisory. I don't think the health department should be canceling anyone's events. That's their decision. You can advise them on it. And so I would rather see that phrasing because I don't want to take away anyone's liberty to do what they want if they think that's best.
You must have read Milton Friedman's book.
To clarify, when I talk about potential cancellation events, I'm talking about county events, not community.
Oh, okay.
So what we're talking about here is what actions the county as a broad entity is taking. So us making the decision to cancel our own events if it's deemed unsafe.
That makes way more sense to me.
Which would be, what kind of events do we have?
We'd have a vaccination clinic or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it might be a temperature sensitive. Or a cleanup day in the park.
We're already temperature sensitive too.
Yeah.
So, and it's this may go down a bit of a rabbit hole that I wouldn't personally necessarily want to pursue, but it is worth clarifying just because it is more accurate that we are talking about two different populations here largely when we discuss cooling centers versus warming centers. Warming centers do tend to draw in more of a transient population because homes have access to heat generally by necessity. Cooling centers, if you look at the people who die during extreme heat events, it's actually far more often people that have homes. It's people that have access to those resources. You tend to see less of a transient population present, but by a wide margin. Now, the question about what our obligation is to the transient population versus the housed population is a very different conversation.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd like to mention is, as wonderfully simple as this three-bullet slide is, I threw together, there is actually a lot of work that is happening behind the scenes on this. This isn't something that just happens. I want to give a lot of appreciation to Leah Swanson. For any of you that haven't met her yet, she is our Public Health Emergency Preparedness Coordinator, also known as our FEP Coordinator. And she's been doing a lot of work behind the scenes on a lot of things. So a lot of the stuff that lands in front of you, she's had her fingerprints on it. So, and also appreciation to Emily, Director Ring, because she's been helping Leah out on this.
Yeah, I appreciate that mention, and I want to thank them as well. So these, like phase one, phase two, phase three, will eventually have some thresholds like temperature and humidity or whatever that looks like.
We started going down the path of trying to define exactly what temperatures, what with, combined with what humidities, combined with how many days in a row, combined with how cool it gets at night, because that's an important qualifier. At the end of the day, we're opting to simply go with what the National Weather Service says, because they're the experts. Because when we started digging into their the actual algorithm they use for determining these things, it's not like an algorithm. It looks at historical trends, because a extreme heat day for us may be very different from an extreme heat day in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And so they look at historical trends, they look at changes in humidity, they take all those things into consideration. So what's an extreme heat day here versus in Eugene is different. And rather than try and get a doctoral degree in this stuff, we decided to just let them define it. That's why we're going with their categories of heat advisory, heat watch, heat warning. And when they announce it for our community, we align.
All right, let's move on to item number two, Mr. Weber.
All right. This one is pretty quick and easy, and I'm actually going to kick it over to Christine and Angelique. We are fixing a problem in the community that Christine's been dealing with ever since she arrived here. So for those who don't know, Christine Shepherd is our manager over our WIC program. Go ahead, Christine.
Thanks, Director Weber. Good morning, Commissioners.
Morning.
I wanted to bring forward some good news. Since I started, we've been dealing with kind of an access problem to a lot of our, with a lot of our folks in the county. And now that we've rolled Perry County into to our service area, you know, that reach is that much bigger. We've been dealing with a really old vehicle. It was purchased back in 2002. And frankly, we are at the point where we don't want to drive it anymore. It's being maintained, but I've been looking to get a more adequate vehicle to do some outreach with our clients and create a mobile clinic. And then with the help of Angelique, we were able to secure a grant through the National WIC Association. It was a very competitive grant. Only 7 local agencies nationwide were awarded or were be able to, were chosen to become some grantees. And Josephine County was one of them. So we were awarded up to $55,000 to purchase a new vehicle and get it all kitted out to create a little mobile clinic for us. And so I just wanted to share that awesome news with you.
What kind of vehicle are we going to get?
I was looking at getting a cargo van or a transit van, and then we were going to wrap it with some logos and be able to kit it out inside. I'm working with a liaison in South Carolina who has kitted out her agency with it. So we're trying to decide if it's something that we want to have participants be able to get into the van and be up there, or just get
the
up from
one
started.
Day
to the next.
Just one second, we lost our fearless leader. And so I don't know if you're acquiring the vehicle in the process, but Scott Chansey has some channels that might show a vehicle that would work for you, because he's always acquiring and shuffling vehicles, so to speak.
Yes, fantastic. We have been in talks with Fleet to see if we can secure a vehicle through them.
Great.
All right. Thank you. And we'll move this on to Wednesday.
I sometimes have a problem with programs that the government creates, believe it or not. But women and infant children, we're the best nation in the world. If we don't take care of our kids and those that are most in need, then we're not doing our job. And so I do like this project above a lot of other government programs. So I'm so glad to meet you. And so glad you've taken this on. So thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you
so much for your support.
Good luck. Thank you.
Thank you,
Commissioners.
All right, Michael, you got anything else you want to, just what's going on with COVID and Delta, and just give a 3-minute synopsis on that, will you?
Sure.
I don't have anything specifically prepared, but I can tell you, not a big surprise with the lifting of restrictions and events continuing to move on. We are seeing a rise in cases. We do know that Delta is here. We've confirmed the presence of the Delta variant, and we're keeping an eye on it. And is there any specific information?
No, no, so it doesn't sound like anything alarming. I think we all anticipated a little spike, you know, when all the mandates went away and stuff. And are things kind of where you predicted things would be going?
No, we're definitely seeing more than we really kind of expected. The lifting of the restrictions, we anticipated more people continuing to follow them. And we just haven't seen that. That's really driven a much higher rise in cases than we were really expecting at this point. We're back to where we were mid-spring, but we'll continue to watch it.
Okay.
At this point, we're not anticipating any change from the state. They've been very
clear.
No, they're out of session. They'll be fine until next February, so we'll be all right.
Wow, I hope we're fine until next February, this fall. Because I'm a little nervous about the radio silence out of Salem. Are you getting radio silence out of the health department up north as well?
Well, we talk to them every day on a lot of topics. So they're never radio silent. Of the 900 emails I get a day, about half of them are from them. So the right now the big conversation that's going on is with the schools and what reopening looks like. And that's always gonna be a challenge because that's not a conversation between us and the school district. It's a conversation between the governor's office and OHA and us and the school district and the Department of Education. And so right now there's inconsistent guidance and recommendations. So we're trying to work with the schools to figure out how to best right now, our highest priority is figuring out how best to get students in classroom and keep them there and do so safely. So that's what we're working on right now, and those conversations are ongoing.
All right, Michael, well, thank you. Anything else?
Yeah, just one more. What about vaccination in our county? Do we have a number? And have your clinics been successful? There was one last Saturday out of Jubilee Park in IV. How'd that go?
Leah, I think, has the specific numbers on that. I can tell you it's continuing to be a challenge. We really need to figure out how to bolster confidence. I'm Good. Probably going to start doing videos addressing specific questions that citizens have. And if you have any questions you'd like us to address, I'd love to get them on there.
Yeah, I got a question. Why are we calling it a vaccine when it's not actually a vaccine? And no, you don't have to answer that.
I want to. That's a common question. It is a vaccine. Definitionally, it's a vaccine.
Because they changed the definition. It is not a vaccine. I hate to argue with you, but it is not.
Traditional
vaccine. It's not a traditional vaccine at all. It's gene therapy.
It's not gene therapy because it doesn't have any effect on genes. So mRNA isn't something that actually modifies DNA at all. It's something that our body produces based on DNA to produce proteins. And that's really all mRNA is. It's a set of instructions for how to produce protein, and that's all our body does with it. And it's something that all of our protein structures in our body use mRNA to create them. There is no process to reverse transcribe mRNA into DNA. So all mRNA is a set of instructions to build the protein structure. So rather than us injecting with the protein itself, we're injecting with the instructions for how to create it. And for a lot of reasons, that's a beneficial approach. It is fairly novel in humans. It's not something that we've used, but that's because it's relatively new technology. But it to be used in this way, I should say. But it is, by definition, a vaccine. Vaccines have changed form over the years several times. We went from injecting a very similar type of microbe, and that's where you see like cowpox versus smallpox. We inject you with something that's less dangerous because it infers immunity to this other thing. All the way up to breaking apart or deadening a virus and giving you a dead version of it. or a weakened version of it, all the way down to breaking it apart and giving you pieces of the virus. And now we're down to simply giving you just that one piece you need to recognize it. It is, and if that is a concern for people, if you don't want to have that form, if you want to go with an older style of vaccine, though there are still those more traditional classic styles of vaccines out there. Some of the ones on the market are do have that that technique for immunity.
So, Michael, I'm still seeing, like, just this last weekend, I had two videos sent to me, and I reviewed them, and they were doctors talking about this. And then on Saturday morning, I was listening to the radio, and I was listening to a doctor out of Florida, and he was on the other side, completely on the other side. Mm-hmm. So I'm still seeing, why is the medical community seem to be so split on this? I don't get it. You'd think that.
I can answer that. It's because of what portions of the medical community you have visibility of. There's a reason why we don't rely on videos being shared on social media, because those have a natural slant. When a video gets shared on social media, people only share the information that they tend to agree with. So what happens is you start to get this polarization of information based off of the communities that you're engaged with socially.
Yeah, but some of these guys got some pretty good credential. That virologist, who is a Nobel Peace Prize winner for identifying HIV, I mean, he's got some pretty good credentials.
And I have a wonderful video from a Nobel Prize winner who explained to you that aliens from Planet 10, who are housed inside our hollow Earth, are taking over the government by slowly replacing all our politicians.
I don't think that's a very good analogy.
Right. Yeah, they also gave one to a president before he took the oath, yeah. So they're not always perfect.
The point is, at the end of the day, where you're getting and where you're sourcing your information is very important. When we look at information, I've never based a view of mine or public health on a video that's shared through social media. We look at the raw data, and we look at what the consensus is. You will always be able to find a dozen, 20, 100, even 1,000 people that have kind of these extreme views that are not aligned with mainstream medical science and the view of the mainstream medical community. And those people, for various reasons, will pick up these rather extreme views. But we don't base our position from a public health perspective on those individuals' views.
Well, I remember at one time the entire world thought it was flat, and there was one guy walking around says it was round. So
yes, and that's a good point.
Yeah,
how we determined that the world was round was through the scientific method, and that scientific method has been consistent or relatively consistent over the ages. And what we don't want to do is break away from it. Just because people have held extreme views in the past that turned out to be right doesn't mean we should trust everybody with an extreme view.
No, I'm so just right saying, I just finding it hard to just totally dismiss a group of people that have MD behind their names or PhDs or ABC, whatever, just to dismiss it because that's not the norm. I struggle with that. I'm sorry.
Right. Well, because the scientific method is to question it, and we are not questioning the vaccine properly. We are hook, line, and sinker doing what the government told us to do without any of the science to back it up, because they're the ones giving you the data. So I respectfully will argue with you on some extreme views that you're pointing out when there's a whole group of medical professionals and politicians that are like, hey, you're not following your own scientific method of questioning it every day until everybody gets the facts. Because now we're saying we have to trick people to take a vaccine by giving them money. That is not a very scientific method for producing information and compliance. And so it's very disconcerting that our government is holding out trinkets to try and get people to take a vaccine when they still don't have the science to back it up.
So one thing I do want to clarify here is this isn't just a government thing. the information and the confidence that we have in these vaccines doesn't just come from a government entity. There are countless research organizations, private entities, universities, people that don't have ties to government. This is just an incredibly broadly researched topic. And
it's an incredibly political topic.
Commissioner Barrett Trigger, I don't recommend you disregard those videos. Every video, every article I get, even the very extreme ones, I review them and I evaluate them. And there's very specific criteria that I evaluate them on. And every single claim that those videos propose, every single one, I document every one of them, and I look at every single one of those individual views to see if I can validate it. The most important thing we can do is to question or to ask what we believe and why. Hands down, there's no more important question we can ask ourselves.
Well, that brings us, that moves it from a theory to fact, is when you can validate things. I get that. And I, Michael, I'm in the political world, have been for some time. Sean Hill's finally starting to figure that out. There's a couple things. I acknowledge that the entire world runs on some level of greed. That's just how it works. There's not a society on this planet that doesn't run on some form of greed. And when I looked at how many vaccinations, how much money are these pharmaceutical companies making? And the other thing that caught my attention is we've waived. So historically, when a pharmaceutical company comes up with a drug and it gets out on the market, and then we find out it's a bad drug, they get sued and they have liability. They don't get no liability on this one. This is a free ride. If this thing goes sideways, there will be no lawsuits to the pharmaceutical companies because that has been waived under the emergency. So those are the two things that kind of prop my eyes up a little bit, is how much money are these companies making? And they have no liability.
You're right. I mean, there's a few small corrections that I would make to that, but you're correct. The liability has been taken on by government organizations in our country. That's not necessarily true everywhere, though. There is still liability in a lot of places. And that gets into a very long conversation. We could talk for an hour on the history of why liability waivers have come into play. And whether or not that's appropriate is a very different question about whether or not, compared to whether or not there has been adequate research done on the vaccine itself.
So as you have two former legislators sitting in this room, and I think both of us know how much the pharmaceutical companies contribute to the lobbying of legislators across this country. Yep. So I bring all of those issues up because it's something to think about, and it's a reality. And that's just how it works. A lot of people don't like to hear that, but there's all kinds of moving pieces.
And that's why I asked to get away from the public messaging, the lobbying, those types of information, and try to get down to what is the core research. What can we actually evaluate? What can we actually see? And that's our job as public health, to cut through that noise as best we can.
All right.
I have never, ever dealt with something where it's been so difficult.
We're all there. This has been a very complicated outbreak. No question about it. Very complicated.
Well, yes.
But I can also tell you that I don't know if I could express a higher level of confidence other than to say that myself, my wife, my kids have all been vaccinated.
Well, I've never been an anti-vaccination person, okay? We vaccinated our kids. We were probably more selective, but we did. But I am a medical freedom individual, and that's just how I'm built, so. Okay.
And I don't oppose that. I do believe there's a lot of value in there being a choice and how we care for ourselves and our family. But what we want to do is make sure that the information that's out there is good.
And I appreciate that. I think under the crazy circumstances we've had this last year and a half, you and your staff have done an outstanding job, and I really do appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I'll second that.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'll ask is if we do opt to make some of these videos kind of outlining how we come to a conclusion on these types of questions when they arise, if you could give us a few to kind of kick that process off, I think that'd be a great path forward.
I would entertain that, but I would like the board to review them before they go public.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We were going to have a little finance report, but Sandy had some other things came up. So do you have any other business?
I don't.
Got one item just came in. A member of the press has asked for the Zoom link for these meetings, and I don't know if any other citizens are getting the Zoom link. It doesn't sound like it, but
that's
request has come in, so I wanted to float it. It might be something to wait for Dan to come in and talk about as well. I don't know.
Yeah, I would think that the weekly business session, yes, when there's public comment, we could open the phone or the Zoom up, but in these meetings, I don't think so.
But yeah, these are more like preliminary. Workshops. Yeah.
Yeah, these are workshops. And this is where we talk about things that aren't mature yet. Mm-hmm. And so, and the paper knows that because they try and get ahead of us on almost everyone. And so I'd rather thwart that. They can come and listen, just like everybody else. We're right here downtown.
Yep, I concur.
Okay.
Yep. All right. With that, we will adjourn at 9:38. And could you navigate that, Gizmo?